And tonight we will be continuing on talking about types of love. We will be joined by Brian Anthony, a musician, sound healer, and the current pilot of Harmonized Humanity, a podcast that he has recently launched or is launching. So stay tuned as we pontificate on love and its many facets and how it weaves its way into our lives. It may not always be the answer, but sometimes and most frequently has something to do with the answer of what we are currently working on in life. We'll be talking about Don Miguel Ruiz and the mastery of love. Feel free to call in and chime in to be part of the conversation here on the air. The number that'll get you on the air is 895-1114. We look forward to talking with you quite soon.
If Santa brings you a new sleigh this holiday season, donate your old one to KZFR. We'll come pick it up from your home or office. It's a gift that keeps on giving because we'll turn it into great programming for you and your family to enjoy throughout the year. Call 888-KZFR-AUTO to see if your call qualifies or go online to kzfr.org. That's 888-KZFR-AUTO.
To the new age, welcome to the new age.
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by The Printed Image, specializing in custom screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. Using the latest technology in their state-of-the-art building, The Printed Image provides custom screen printing, embroidery, and promotional products for businesses, organizations, or special event. For custom apparel and promotional products, The Printed Image has dedicated specialists providing quality service, quick turnaround, and memorable products by calling 898-9525 or at printedimagechico.com.
Dance party, and it's going to take place at the 1078 Gallery on Broadway.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of great dancing, including go-go dancers dancing all night on platforms above the crowd, plus Chico's greatest dance squads, including Return to Saturn, and so there's going to be performances by them, and we're going to have African drummers playing along with the DJs, plus Naftali is going to lead everybody once per hour in a famous Soul Train line dance. And there's a photo booth. Jason Powers Photography is going to capture those memories you have with your friends dressed in the fashion of the 70s.
So once you get a little worked up and hot and sweaty, you can step outside and join us at the Hookah Lounge, where you can sit and smoke some tasty tobacco treats in the back.
And also play bocce ball.
Oh yeah, you can sit up on the couch and watch and cheer for your favorite player.
Plus, we have a fabulous bar with great New Year's Eve drinks and a free champagne toast at midnight.
And for those of you that had a little too much to drink and need a little snack, we will be feasting on some Caribbean food brought to you by our favorite chef, Mr. Ice Cream.
So come join us on New Year's Eve at the Slow Train.
Your fashion dance line is brought to you by Bootleg. Mention our event, Slow Train, and get an additional 15% off on your funky fresh outfit, so don't forget.
All right, welcome back to Love in the 21st Century. We are talking about types of love, and Brian Anthony is here with me in the studio. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Tamara. Hey. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for making it today, making it a priority to be here.
Yes.
It's always great to have friends in the studio talking about love.
Yeah, I'm glad I made it.
Yeah. So the theme these last few weeks have been types of love, and you know, we've gone in different directions when we talk about types of love. We talked about the Greek types of love, and Adam Mose brought in the Eastern philosophy perspective on love. Mm. And, the whole premise behind the show is to be this sort of continuous conversation about love, because it is just sort of this endless topic. And so, yeah, I'm so happy to have you and yourself and what you represent in the musical world and the sound healing and just like, you know, a spiritually astute individual. So I'm excited to hear what flavor you have to bring to us
tonight.
Totally.
Right on. Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm very glad I was here. I was a little bit late because of work stuff. And I have to share that experience because it will kind of go into what I want to kind of talk about. And I'm driving up here from Yuba City, and I was late from a work appointment, and I'm like, you know, flipping out. I'm like, crap, you know, like, just, you don't want to be late for these things. And obviously, and so as I'm sitting there freaking out, all of a sudden I look over and the sunset was off the hook.
Mm.
Awesome. Nice. Like if I wasn't on my way to a radio show, I would have stopped.
Right.
And soaked it up for as long as I could. I mean, it was just so amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because sunsets have this really profound thing for me, especially because like the most beautiful ones I've ever seen have come to me in at points where I've been really low.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been this really synchronistic, like just absolute visual showing of like the amazingness of our planet, you know, mm-hmm. right there in front of me, like just for that reminder that to like anchor in. And so I kind of sunk back in. I was like, man, this place is beautiful. Like, how can I be stressed right now about anything? It's just so amazing. And it was just, what it made me aware of was like my personal vibration, mm-hmm. right? And how quickly that can change.
Absolutely.
And how quickly I can tap into that. So, you know, I suppose when I like to talk about love, I mean, talking about it in the context of what I do as like a sound therapist and looking at music and vibration, you know, I've been looking at everything in this like very vibrational way, right? And concepts like harmony and looking at how science and religions and philosophies are all kind of saying a lot of the same things about this thing that we call love and how we interact with it. And mm-hmm. and you know, when you asked me to come on the show, I was kind of formulating this like this blog post is what I wanted it to be. I don't have a blog up yet, so I was just mm-hmm. kind of formulating in my head, but it really wanted to come out, especially after a couple of meditation gatherings that I've done recently. I've come out of them just being like, man, like I want to be a champion for love.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like you like, and I know you know what I'm talking about. Like getting out of like these suites, like types of circles where you're just gathering with awesome people, and there's like this open hearted connection, and it's just like, why can't this be out in the world, you know? Like mm-hmm. how can I be the voice to just like bring this to people? And that's what was kind of formulating in my head about it. And what I really wanted to talk about was really just the things that I see that I think are kind of blamed on love.
Yes, quite a few things.
You know, that is just it's an interesting check-in point, and I don't want to present it in any kind of way that I feel is wrong. You know, I'm really trying hard not to like say anything is right or wrong because it's all part of our experience, right? But I do see that there's a lot of the kind of programming that we are in our society that tells us kind of what our concepts of love like should be and how we operate with them and how we interact with it. And what spurred this actually is I read this article, and this article was talking about how love couldn't save relationship, you know, mm-hmm. from this author's perspective. And the point, the kind of argument he was trying to make is he says that people will say that love is the answer to everything. And he's like, well, in this particular scenario, it wasn't. Love couldn't save my relationship. And he had some very good points about it. My contestation to it was that he was pinpointing these things on love that really weren't love, you know? Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, in my view, it was like, okay, what is it when we bring love into a relationship? Like, what does it mean that love can kind of solve things? What does it mean when we say love is the answer?
Right.
You know? And so my kind of hypothesis was like, love might not be the answer to everything, but love is in the answer mm-hmm. to everything.
Right.
And when I think about that, it's like, you know, if you go to like a very basic decision, like if you go to like a work scenario, for example, let's say you have a coworker that you're not getting along with, mm-hmm. and at every step it seems like that particular coworker is like butting heads with you and trying to like make your life a living hell, right? And you're trying to navigate how to make a decision about this important part of your project with this person that you just don't get along with. And it's like, what can you imagine? Because there's always the reactionary stuff when it comes to our egos bumping into each other, mm-hmm. you know, and we always want to make sure that or think that we're right. And even if that person's character flaws are so like flagrantly out there and everyone around you is just saying, yeah, he's hard to deal with, and you're like, And so you feel justified. It's like, what happens when you bring love into the answer of, like, you know, you're, let's say you're in a position where you don't know what the answer is. Like, you don't know how to handle it. It's like, what happens when you bring love into that situation?
Right.
Both love for yourself and then love for the situation and love for that person. It's like, what happens when you interject that into that situation and right. where does it go? Mm-hmm. And I bring up that scenario because I've had to implement it before. And, It changes things because it doesn't necessarily ask you to, like, agree that what that person is doing is correct.
Right.
But when you bring love into it, what love does is it's accepting the situation. First of all, it brings in acceptance. It brings in an understanding, and then it starts to bring in empathy. Mm-hmm. And you start asking questions. Because in my experience, when you start bringing love into a process, you start trying to understand as opposed to trying to put out your energy into that field. Does that kind of make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's interesting when I start talking about this and I start getting the visuals of these situations I've been in, because we then kind of go to the concept of the vibration and what love means as a frequency. And I think that is kind of an interesting thing to tune into and to understand. I was listening recently to a talk by a guy named David Wilcock, and he wrote a book called The Source Field Investigations and a couple other books as well. And he does these kind of meta-analysis of different scientific studies that kind of that reveal some very interesting things about how our reality works.
Right.
And one of the things he was talking about is the potentiality that, like, the force of gravity, for example, is actually a manifestation of what we would also consider as love, which is really interesting.
Absolutely.
Right? And when he started codifying the different similarities of each one of them, it was just like, whoa, you know, start getting those, like, chills.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like gravity is basically everything trying to come back to a single point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I think about love, it's like love is a gravitational attraction. It is a pure gravitational attraction for everything kind of to like meld into.
Mm-hmm.
And really the only thing that keeps us from that melding is the different blocks that we put up in the way of it.
Right.
You know, when I was prepping for this talk, I was listening again to the audiobook by Don Miguel Ruiz, The Mastery of Love. Have you ever read it?
I have.
You have?
Yeah.
Awesome.
A couple years ago on Valentine's Day, I spent all day in my room reading that book. It was one of my favorite Valentine's Day, actually.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's so amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so simple. Like the way he writes and the knowledge. I mean, the audiobook's like 2.5 hours long. Like, it's not very long. I listened to it on, like, you know, a full day's worth of road trip at work, and I really liked reading it because I could just read little simple snippets. But it's like, it's these simple, profound statements about love that really just kind of bring it back to the simplicity of what it actually is and what is holding us back from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how he talks about the domestication of humans and how he just simply highlights the fact that when we're kids, I mean, we love freely.
Right.
Right. And we're just expressions of love. And because we're expressions of love, when things come into our existence that upset us and get us out of that vibration, we process it immediately. Like, we throw a tantrum, we cry, we do all these different things, but it's like, as soon as that's processed, we're back in that vibration of love. We're back in that
right.
that necessity to gravitate towards other people and play and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, it every time I listen to it and read it, I'm like, why have we forgotten this?
Right.
You know, what is it that has normalized the fact that what happens is that we then are taught to start putting up walls around it,
mm-hmm.
to start putting barriers and confining, like, what is worthy of our love and what is worthy of, you know, what what our worthiness is in regards to love, you know?
Right. I would think that it has, like, especially around the emotional release, which I think is a big part of allowing ourselves to be open to love and experiencing love with people that maybe have hurt us, which is, you know, tends to happen in loving relationships, whether that's, you know, parent and child, whether that is siblings or intimate partners, whatever have you. Like, in some shape or form, something bothers you at some point. And so when you're talking about, like, that tantrum piece, it's like, or the releasing of that energy, I think what often happens in childhood, you know, up until adulthood and beyond, is we get socialized to not express our emotions, not to let people know how we're truly feeling or what we are truly experiencing, like put on a happy face or shut down and don't talk about it and like move on. And so it actually, like when you're talking about like the compartmentalizing or cutting off of actual access to loving somebody because you have this this baggage that you're holding on to that you can't release or you haven't released. And so it's like it almost makes your availability to love that much smaller. So we don't see the benefit in that release of like, okay, actually if I release this, it'll make more space again.
Yeah. That's a really great point.
Yeah.
There's a really strong normalization of separation. And that's just, and that's, Don Miguel Ruiz talks about that as just kind of the human experience. And the interesting part about that is, I mean, he's using wisdom that's like several thousands of years old. And it applies to the totality of the human experience, which is really interesting. These are the things that kind of get me like locked in and thinking about it, because this is really, I think that these are the wisdoms that are really going to help us.
Right.
Because we can definitely define it, obviously, in our particular society. And I think more other societies are a little bit more either susceptible to that separation or more open and loving and whatnot, you know, just as a natural kind of intrinsic quality. And I've traveled a little bit and I've seen that. I've seen cultures that typically it's the ones that have less money,
right,
that have a little bit of a more of a stronger just natural heart connection. And then the more materialistic kind of societies, you know, they have the priorities of what's important to them and what's supposedly supposed to make them happy, you know. It seems to, and in those societies the normalization of that separation is it's so built into us, so it's like, yeah, well, how are we supposed to know that anything's wrong if it's what's normal, you
Absolutely.
Know and that's why I love these conversations, because now we can start bringing this into the field and talking about it, and we can start highlighting, like, okay, what is it that's unhealthy about our interactions? And that's why one of the things I wanted to kind of the main part about what I want to talk about is like where are we blaming love?
That's awesome. I wanted you to come back to that.
Yeah,
what the guy was talking about, things that we blame love for.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, where are we blaming love when it's really us?
Right.
or experience. And also, I think it's really important for us to really start looking at, like, where are we blaming ourselves? Like, when we start, that's a tricky part about this process, right? So as soon as we start being aware of our so-called, like, character defects or our limitations, the immediate response is like, oh, man, I am messed up.
Right.
You know, or you know.
Something's wrong with me.
Yeah, exactly. And I start blaming myself for that. And you know, that's... It's can be kind of tricky, but it's, you know, where are we getting into the place where we are understanding what is it that love really provided us in a relationship? How could love have made it different, or what was necessary in that relationship for love to come into and shed light on? In regard to this guy's article, my argument was, well, if a relationship is no longer harmonious, then in my observation and experience, it seems that bringing love into that, truly bringing love into that, would mean that that love would shed light on the truth of how that interaction is either helping or harming each individual that's part of it. Does that kind of make sense? Like, love is in the answer. It is the answer to the relationship process. And love can, I guess what he said is like love couldn't save the relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, so that's an assumption that the relationship should have been saved.
Right, absolutely. And sometimes the most loving thing to do is to not be in a relationship.
Right.
Because of what something you just said about if the relationship is no longer harmonious, if it's no longer serving the people that are in the relationship, or if something like sort of is now no longer an illusion, for instance, like a relationship that's been chronically unhealthy and then because of like indulgence in certain behaviors, and then all of a sudden one partner decides not to do those things, and it starts to become really apparently obvious, like, oh wow, we were really escaping all these issues in our relationship by drinking together, partying together, and it's like you can no longer hide from that. Was the relationship unhealthy but prior to that? Would love have saved the relationship? Could they have loved each other through it? Well, what's in the best interest of both people? Mm-hmm. You know, that's actually the most loving thing. And sometimes it doesn't mean being in a relationship. So mm-hmm. I like how you pointed that out. That's the assumption that one, the relationship was worth saving.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we can look at a couple scenarios, right? Like, for example, you know, I come from a background of alcoholism mm-hmm. and addiction. And I've been through a program to get out of that, and I'm really, really fortunate that I was able to kind of make it through that. And in my experience of operating in that world, I saw a lot of unhealthy relationships as part of unhealthy relationships, right. You know, and when I look at certain examples, like especially when it comes to people who are kind of just intrinsically addicts in that particular time of their life where they're in relationship, I see a lot of that conversation that might be an extreme example of things that I think we all potentially can go through, because mm-hmm. it's not just people who are considered addicts that have addictive tendencies. Absolutely. when it comes to relationship. Mm-hmm. So one of the situations, an example is like, you know, bringing love into a situation. It's like when a relationship starts being tenuous, mm-hmm. There's several different places you can bring that love into to evaluate whether or not this is something that, you know, may or may not be working. And first is the self-love, you know, bringing it into yourself and honoring what is it about this relationship is feeding you, and what about it is compromising you. Mm-hmm. And are those compromises that are feeling unhealthy or are stifling to you? Are those things that potentially could be worked through, or are they just an intrinsic quality of your partner? Right. You know, is it just something you guys haven't worked out because it's a conflict resolution thing, or is it just there's something about that person that you just wish you could change? Mm-hmm. But it's that person, you know, mm-hmm. because when we start getting into the realm of like, well, if only they would just change that one behavior, then things would be perfect. It's like, well, at what point are we asking them to be someone they're not, you know?
Right.
And then that's when we can also bring that love to that other person. Mm-hmm. Am I enabling this person to have a less than ideal experience of their life by clinging onto this relationship? Mm-hmm. And that's what I've seen a lot in the kind of more addictive, you know, deeply addictive relationships that I've seen, the codependent ones. It's like, mm-hmm. I'll conversate with one. I've been in a lot of positions where I've been kind of the friend talking mm-hmm. to both the partners, you know, and I'll get the thing where they'll say, it's obvious that it's not a good position for them to be in right now in relationship.
Right.
You know, I'm not making that necessarily that judgment. It's just everything that's happening in their life is suggesting that. Right. And mm-hmm. then I talk to them, and they're still like, well, but I love him, or I love her. And I hear that a lot. It's like, but I love him. I mean, there's all the XYZ is happening. Like this is an abuse, like sometimes it's an abusive relationship, right. or whatever. But I love him. But mm-hmm. I and that right there, I feel like is an incorrect direction at love in that statement. I don't mm-hmm. think love is the right word, in the sense that yes, that person does love them, mm-hmm. but what they're really saying is like, but I have troubles being disconnected from this person because they're giving me a medicine right now that I feel like I can't get elsewhere, mm-hmm. and that's where that addiction comes into. When I say mm-hmm. When I look at the relationship and I say XYZ is destroying both of our realities right now, but I love them, mm-hmm. you know, and love, I think love can do this for us. it, you know, at what point are we, you know, just holding on to that in an addictive way. And and so that's kind of an example. It's like, well, what, like on that particular example I gave you, when I looked at when let's say he, we'll say a friend of mine was like looking at their partner and their relationship was creating instability that was allowing the partner to drink and use, right? Because they're trying to stay sober, but the relationship was not a cause, but was a difficult thing to navigate while this person was trying to get their life together.
Right.
And so it became apparent that it might be a good idea for this to be a, you know, not a, an interaction anymore while this person was able to find some help, you know? But that person that I'm talking to is like, well, I mean, I just, yes, I think they need to go do their own thing. I think I really do think they need to go and get in their process and get sober, but I love them. And so it's like that, but I love them is like, but I want to hold on to them. I don't want to let them go. And at that point, that's a disservice to the other person. Like, if we know that the separation of this relationship, although painful for both people, would ultimately allow space for one or the other or both to grow, get over process, and or go through process and get better, that's kind of an evaluation point, you know? And I think that's an extreme case, but we can bring that into a lot of relationships. I mean, not just romantic ones, but right. ones with friends and family and, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's just when I see people talking about that aspect of like love, like couldn't save a relationship. In I think it could save, quote unquote, a relationship in the way that it when it's brought in and it illuminates what's actually going on, then decisions can be made prior to it breaking down to a point where it causes even more pain. Does that kind of make sense?
Right. Pain or maybe resentment or the feelings of not being able to salvage anything from that relationship, just so much to the point that both parties feel like they can't be near or around each other, which would be interesting then, because like how much was love in the essence of what we're talking about, the energy to bring something together or bring something to its wholeness, be present in that relationship to begin with. Mm-hmm. How much more was it more of the way that you shared it, which I really appreciated that I don't want to be detached from this person that is giving me a particular type of medicine right now that I don't think I can get anywhere else. It's like, yeah, I mean, I think that sometimes it's more of that connection to that individual, to that relationship, whether it's family member or partner or, you know, or roommate situation, than it is to, you know, an actual feeling of what love is.
Yeah.
Very, you know, interesting things to consider.
I mean, it's tough because we are in a position where a lot of us don't receive a lot of the love that's probably necessary to get a nice good start in life, and even when we have both parents in our lives, the blockages that might have been created by their lineage and their ability to express love and to connect, you know, our parents could have done, and really I think every parent did exactly what they could do with what they were given, in my opinion, and that doesn't necessarily, you know, justify any particular actions, but what I see in the lineage of my parents and other people's parents is that we're passed down all these protocols on how to live and how to parent, and so those are what we draw on, and how to connect and how
to love, and or how to not love, or how to love ourselves, or how to not love ourselves. And so I think it all really comes back to that practice of like, how do we really show up for love for ourselves,
right?
So it's very interesting to think about that in relation to like the relationships and the unhealthy dynamics that you were talking about, because we think about, you know, what's the most loving thing that we can do for somebody else. And oftentimes when it comes to like ourselves and like self-preservation or taking care of ourselves, it's kind of the more the tough love mentality of like, okay, I got to like set some boundaries with myself, and I have to sort of like make like follow up with myself and make sure that I'm doing the things that I want to do that makes me feel loved. So if that means like making your bed or eating food that like makes you feel good, like that's a form of self-love, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you bring it back to that element of like parenting and how we are modeled these behaviors of how to take care of ourselves and how to love ourselves. And so then we have so many people in the world that, you know, like maybe their parents were there, but their parents were so absorbed in whatever other things they were doing in their life, whether it was work, whether it was, you know, their own addictions, whether it was their unhealthy relationship that they were modeling to their children. We pick up these skills that we have to sort of unlearn as adults and how to take care of ourselves. But it really, like, when we get down to it, when we really get down to like self-love, what I like to call self-love in action, it is really kind of like tough love. And like if we applied that to our relationships, I think it might be a little different, the types of relationships that we were in.
Yeah.
I guess one place that I get to, though, what like my question is with that, because, you know, there's certain things, like there's certain tendencies, right, that are more in the unhealthy dynamic, you know, and that are sort of like, okay, kind of the observer's view. You'd be like, okay, that's unhealthy. Like whatever is going on, addictive tendencies, arguing, fighting, violence, all those things. But then I feel like there's this like precipice of like when you're growing or modifying as an individual, and meaning like the way you relate to somebody, your own self-worthiness, your own communication skills, and then you're like in a partnership, right? And so in that partnership, like at what point is it doing a service to both partners to continue to do that work together,
right?
Versus like to do it separately. You know, it's interesting. It's because I feel like there's a part of it that is going to have to be done with somebody.
Oh yeah, totally.
Regardless if it's the person you're with currently, you know, there's a point of which that like that's just you know, there's things we cannot do alone, I guess.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, I mean, that's of course, because like I looked at that the picture that you had that you posted when you posted on Facebook, and it says, you know,
to master love, you must practice love.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that involves relationship, and we can practice that in many relationships, and I've had a great opportunity to really develop some awesome, like, deep heart-centered friendships. Like, you know, once I got sober, I was able to actually start connecting with people on a deep level, and I was able to kind of start actually practicing this stuff. However, I have yet to have like an extended. I've had, you know, some really awesome interactions and some short-lived romantic relationships that were just kind of a coming together and floating apart of natural causes, you know, which were really great. But I have yet to have like an extended, a romantic relationship. And I do understand, because even just in those short-lived romantic relationships that I did have, they're really deep, and yeah, it's like when you're that close with someone, immediately it's like, whew, all that, like the light starts getting shined on all those things that your self-love has yet to shine upon.
Right. And in just like that close proximity to people, you know, I think that it happens like with roommate situations, with family members. And for me, it's like when you talk about bringing love into a situation, it's like, well, what do you do with it once it's there? I mean, like the in group dynamics sort of work, which I do a lot. It's like there's a point of which, you know, the group forms, and then the actual next stage in a lot of group development theory is storming. People come together. And then, you know, shortly after that, there's like this friction where people like want to start jumping ship. They're just like, I'm out of here. This is too much. But when you think about that, like what family that any of us know doesn't have some sort of like challenge when they come together. It's really in what we do with those challenges that one is if love is showing up and if we are developing a deeper connection with those people.
Absolutely.
And so thinking of like my own relationships and my own relationships with friendships and romantic relationships and roommate situations. Yeah, dude, like sometimes it's my first inclination to be like, this is too much. This is too much. I'm over this. Like, there's a tendency to think that, but it's also like, it's almost like, you know, like the cup is overfilling. Like, you're just watching this cup and you're just like, I got to stop pouring, but I can't stop pouring. And then finally realizing like, oh, right. Like, I need to kind of bring a more compassionate, loving perspective to this situation. And by making that choice, because obviously, like, whether or not I have a dispute with somebody, I still want to be their friend.
Right.
I still care about them. I still want, you know, nothing is that great that it's going to be like, oh, I don't care about this person at all.
Yeah.
And so being able to bring it to that new perspective of like, okay, like, even if this person moves out, even if this, you know, we are not longer friends, like, I still wish the best for them. So I want to get to that place where it's like they can hear that.
Yeah.
Most of all, even not saying that I'm going to like back down or be like this, you know, not stand my truth. Like, because I think that's an important part of self-love is to not just like fall into the other person and be like, oh, right. You know, I'm so completely sorry for everything I did and said and you're pretty perfect.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, just bringing that perspective of love, like you said, I think it's really it can transform an ordinary situation into an opportunity to create deep intimacy with your coworker.
Totally.
You didn't even know you wanted to have deep intimacy.
Yeah. Well, and it starts making your relations just better,
right.
You know, and when you start taking a little bit extra time to make those connections, even pre-conflict, you know, just starting to just take a few more minutes or seconds to interact with someone at work that you feel like you might not get along with outside, but you just talk to them, you know,
right.
and you try to, you know, maybe meet them on their level, whatever that is, you know, I hate using that word level, but you know, like whatever their desire to talk about is, whether it's the weather or it's whether it's crazy spiritual stuff, you know, or whatever,
right.
Anything in between, just like being able to kind of to get there, and then that starts that cycle of loving, understanding, and seeing the humanness in the people, and then that can start translating into the deeper relationships also, and vice versa. Your deeper relationships start bringing that into the more superficial ones. I think it's like across, you know, it's across the board changing.
Right.
I did want to kind of I wanted to talk about a little bit what you're saying, just going back to kind of the parent thing and the relationship. It's always interesting talking about this because, I don't ever want to codify anything as being wrong. One of the respected spiritual instructors that I've been listening to recently, his name is Matt Kahn.
Yes.
I love his transmissions. And I love them because they're simple. I love them because he talks about that. One of the things he talked about was, you know, there's a lot of talk in the kind of the spiritual circles about like the concepts of like a soulmate and like a twin flame and all these kinds of things. And and the way he presented the perspective was very interesting. But one of the things he was talking about in that talk specifically was that he basically said that no relationships are wrong.
Right.
You know, none of them, like all of them are these wonderful experiences and we're going to get out of them. And that bringing love into those relationships is what allows you to kind of ride that wave and understand that it's like, oh, this person was a, you know, what he would call a twin flame. Actually, his version is actually someone who comes into your life who is a reflection of you and allows you to go through that relationship kind of that trial. And then it becomes apparent at some point that relationship's not supposed to continue, and then you guys part ways. And that's what he kind of codifies as what a twin flame is. And a soulmate is just someone who you can drop into, and it's just like that vibration's there. You guys just like click, things just go smoothly. And that might not necessarily be a life partner either, but it's just like it is a different kind of dynamic. Whereas the twin flame's like a reflection that allows you to really work on those character defects or whatever you want to call them, you know?
Right.
But one of the things that he did say though is that it's like, you know, we bring that love into the relationship. However, as soon as a relationship starts getting abusive, you have full right to be out of there. Right. And I think that's an important marker. It's like it is hard when you're in relationship to be like, okay, at what point am I getting to that precipice where it's like, am I just unwilling to work through this stuff, or is this a relationship that's not supposed to be continuing? And you can use that as a check-in point. Like, is this relationship abusive? And it might not necessarily be overtly physically, mentally, emotionally. However, if the particular shadow that the person or yourself is carrying is conflicting in that relationship in such a way as it is abusing one or both of you in some way, shape, or form, it might be inadvertently, it might be directly, that's a check-in point.
Right.
I think is kind of, you know, a good thing to I don't know, that he suggested. I feel right. like that was kind of a really important note that I got from that one.
Mm-hmm.
I did also, so I wanted to swing back because I did have a full circle with this to connect to my upper hyper hypothesis above it all. So just to go back real quick to the parent thing, you know, the lineage. So for anybody who's listening, I think what I like to do and what I'm wanting to do with my Humanity Harmonized project and the podcast that I'm doing is to really to give some, like you said, action, like love in action, some things that we can start doing. Because when we do have these conversations, it can get to the point where it feels kind of overwhelming. It's like, well, how do I evaluate this, or how do I do this? And like, self-love seems really daunting for some people. I posted this like random Facebook video last night. I don't know if you watched it.
I did. I was like, self-love?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was like midnight and I was trying to fall asleep and I just couldn't do it. And all of a sudden I just like got struck. I was like, some message wants to come through me right now. And I was just like, all right. So I just like started recording this random video. And I ran to the mirror and I told myself I love myself and just showed people that kind of thing. And but some of the comments, you know, I had a friend comment who said that she went and did it and she found it difficult, you know, and so it's like when we start getting into this realm, it's like this is tough. Like, this is a difficult thing for us to undertake, especially if we do come from a lineage or a community or a place that this is not a normal thing.
Right.
It is going against what we have been taught, what we have been domesticated. I mean, I love that Don Miguel Ruiz uses the word domesticated, because as complex as we think we are as humans, the simplicity of the fact that we are kind of are domesticated, like we domesticate animals, like this repetition compulsion, when something is repetitiously told to us that this is the norm or put in action, then it creates a very strong habit to break. I mean, try breaking an old dog of, you know, some habit that they've been doing for 14 years. I mean, it's the same kind of concept.
Right.
So, but we have the opportunity as humans to be able to understand it and take the actions. And
right.
So what I want to bring it back to is the idea behind the Humanity Harmonized Coalition is to ask people to join a unified field of intent to do whatever they feel is possible to bring more balance and harmony to themselves and their community, and really making those actions as simple as possible, if necessary, and understanding how important even just the quote unquote smallest actions should be.
Right.
Like what you were talking about with just the little, I call them like simple love exercises, you know, like just dropping in and just like being appreciative of your body, or even just a body part, you know. Like, I play hockey and I abuse the crap out of my legs, and sometimes I have to sit there on my bed and be like, oh, I love you, legs. Like, I'm sorry I abuse you. And I like give myself a little foot rub, you know. And it's just like, it's a simple like love exercise to bring awareness into like how appreciative I am. But that's changing a lot. Like, if you could imagine the power behind changing the habits that have been passed down generation after generation is huge.
Right.
It is gigantic. We're talking about, you know, the concept. I know that some people, because they've heard it so much recently, the concept of a paradigm shift, this shift in thinking and interacting as a human species. This is going to happen on an individual level. It's not going to happen overnight. But it's going to happen in such a way that it's that if we agree to at least do what we can in our own individual worlds, mm-hmm. it's going to change in a way that we didn't even think is possible, because it's more powerful than we understand. If, for example, we have a lineage of the inability to express emotion, let's say, mm-hmm. you know, let's say we have a really hard time expressing emotion, and I kind of became aware of that in some of the exercises I did with Jasia and her five rhythms dance practice, mm-hmm. was kind of understanding the expression of emotion as I saw it, like growing up from the different people I was around, and that there was certain emotions that I didn't see expressed very much, so I had a hard time expressing myself, right? Mm-hmm. So when I become aware of this, then I have the power to try to change it, and I'm potentially transmuting. It's an alchemical process. I'm transmuting an entire lineage of some action with my action, and that's huge. You're basically you're stopping like generations of force mm-hmm. at your body, your temple. You're like, you're the ones being like, nope, mm-hmm. I'm gonna change this. And even if it's what you think is the smallest thing, you have now changed that for the entirety of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Wow. That's all I can say is wow. Like how amazing that truly is and how powerful mm-hmm. we really are. Like I think that we often underestimate our power.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were sharing that, I was thinking of this experience I had, I don't know, like 6 or 7 years ago now. I was taking a shower and I was getting ready for something and I was feeling anxious about it because I often feel anxious about things that I plan to do. And then I'm like, oh, well, I actually have to do it now. Ah. And so in the shower, I just remember repeating to myself, I am the gusto. I am the gusto. I am the gusto. To the point where I was like, wow, I am the gusto.
I am the
gusto. like, whoa, like that actually does really encapsulate what I'm doing and what I am. And so just like how much that change of thought changed my experience in that moment has since changed my experiences beyond that because of like channeling that anxious energy into the manifestation of whatever I'm creating. And as you're saying, like changing these like, you know, historical lineage patterns that I've sort of accepted both in my family and in our culture around being a woman and being an active change agent in my reality. It's like, I so seldomly think about that, that it's like, oh, you know, like there's culturally, there's been this role for women. And it's like, oh, I guess I am a woman. And I guess that would apply to me. And but because of that changing how much it's like, you know, I feel like for the girls that are be in my life, and if I ever have a daughter, but just like the women and the girls that I'm around raising, how much that my presence is changing that for them as well. And so just amazing, like how powerful we all really are, and we don't necessarily give ourselves credit for that.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Well, I mean, how much more time do we have?
We got a few more minutes, I want you to talk about a little bit more about the Harmonized Humanity and how people can get a hold of you if they want to learn more about you.
Yeah.
And possibly you might be joining us here on a regular basis, and so that's exciting.
Yeah. That'd be really cool. So so I've started the Humanity Harmonized Coalition, as it's called, and this is really a campaign to just put out that vibration, you know. And and there's, you know, lots of things that I didn't really have an opportunity to talk to about, just the concept of harmony and vibration and that kind of thing in our personal life. And that's, but like the thesis, the what I'm wanting to prove is how potent, how much work we can really do by just, I mean, by holding the vision of a unified self and a unified humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And because in my experience, like with my struggles with addiction, for example, like the biggest virtue I had to cultivate that made the difference was willingness.
Absolutely.
Like all I had to do was just become willing, and as soon as I became willing, like my life changed, you know. And so so the idea behind the Humanity Harmonized Coalition is just tuning into the media sources that I'm going to be cultivating. I'm doing a podcast. So right now, what you can get your hands on is you can go to the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It's a closed group right now because it's meant to be a discussion page, and I wanted a little bit of moderation capabilities on it as kind of like a forum until I get that up. So it's if you search Humanity Harmonized Coalition on Facebook, it's there. There's also a Humanity Harmonized YouTube channel where I'm going to be posting my podcasts, which will actually be first ones I'll be up. I have a couple interviews already. Did my initial one. Those will be up this next week.
And then
there will be more coming down the way. I'll have a website up and we'll be utilizing that as really a hub. And the idea is presenting information, showing people that are in the mix, doing things that are bringing better balance to themselves and the community, and then allow just some piece of information to be digested by the person who's tuning in whatever way feels good for them. And really just promoting that understanding that whatever we can do, as small as we think it is, let's redefine what is really going to be the change. You know, what is really important, what is really powerful and potent. These simple things that we can do, and again, even if you're not doing any of them, just tuning in, and if you want to be a part of the coalition, just the willingness to hold the vision, even if you don't know what that looks like, but just the idea that, yes, we can become a harmonious humanity where we can at least live in a way where, you know, the concept of harmony is many different notes that stack on top of each other, that the wave goes around each other in a harmonious way and doesn't clash into each other. Yeah. So that's what creates harmony is when the different sound waves are basically moving around each other all nicely without bumping into each other. And then dissonance, where it's disharmony, is when they're crashing into each other, you know. And I'm sure there's going to be crashes still as we even become a harmonious humanity. Right. But the idea is to hold that vision. And so that's how you can tune in. And I am going to need help. Because that is the idea behind the coalition, is just is holding that vibration, and then whenever you think is available for you, helping with the cause, whatever that looks like. So just last thing I'll say about that is what I'll be doing, the main energy behind this campaign will be doing events.
Awesome.
So we'll be doing group healing events, and it will be utilizing music therapy will be a big part of it, because that's what I do. So sound healing, music therapy, getting people together and getting interactive with sound and vibration as a way to harmonize, and bringing in certain exercises that allow us to just kind of like break down our walls just enough for us to see the humanity in ourselves and others for even just a short time. And in my experience, you know, Jassia's dance
five
class,
rhythms, yeah.
Five Rhythms class was a good example, and some other things that I've been through, where it's just when you lower those walls just enough, and you guys are able, and you're able to look someone deeply in the eye that you don't know very well for an extended period of time, and then that all of a sudden it's just that whoa, wow, this is an amazing human, and we are amazing humans. That's the idea.
So amazing.
Yeah.
So amazing. Thank you so much for joining me, Brian.
Totally.
And making
Thanks for
it
having
here.
Me.
Absolutely. If you're interested in learning more about Humanity Harmonized, then you can search them on Facebook, Humanity Harmonized. It is a private group, but more than likely you'll get added once you have made your approach. So,
yes, absolutely.
So reach out. And thank you for tuning in to Love in the 21st Century. We will be back with you next Tuesday. And stay tuned for Ecotopia with Steve and Susan Chudy. They will be up next. You want to tell them a little bit about this song I'm about to play?
Yeah, which one is it? It's
Lakota Lullaby.
Yeah, this is the Lakota Lullaby. I just stumbled across this actually the other day. And it's a Lakota Sioux lullaby, traditional song. And it's just really beautiful. So it's a good drop in for us.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
wash them.